attuned to the breath. And feel the breath become quite full and restful. Hasaradhanai Khan teaches us the significance of tuning to the natural rhythm of our own breath. But it beckons the question, what is the natural rhythm of our own breath? Connected with that study is so much, for only if we know our own natural rhythm can we then to know when we're in rhythm, when we're out of rhythm, when we're influenced by another's rhythm, when our rhythm is very deliberate so that it can help establish a different rhythm if needed. It's a vast study. Just tune for a few minutes here. The Sufi invocation of Hasaradhanai Khan.
The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance.
Opportunity to gather like this, and we may just for a few moments tune to all of our other brothers and sisters who can't be here with us, that are part of this circle and also part of our greater circle, and just know how much we are all interconnected. And of course, it's a perfect time to invoke the presence of Hasaradhanai Khan and all those other beings who illuminated and inspired him along his path, and also us along our path. The streams upon streams of transmissions that have come through the various masters, saints, and prophets that have called to us to bring us here together. And especially we're blessed that we feel drawn together in kinship and in this initiatic circle. I know we have a guest and a couple guests, and but feel most welcome here. Heaven call. My plan is for this time, and I'll be here just today and tomorrow. I thought I would spend a little more time with those of you that have the time. So I'll have the first session, and then I'm going to continue into the second session. The intention is kind of like what we do in Kansas City, a little more of a retreat environment during this time together. And I know Ayaz, you have to be our conch blower, so you may be coming and going, and people will take a break if it's the intention to go to another class. I'd like to offer what I always offer, and that's the teachings of Anaya Khan. I hope that you know that that's my main concentration. But I also would like to invoke the presence of Hadayat Anaya Khan, Purimurshid Hadayat Anaya Khan, and also my Tibetan Buddhist teacher, His Eminence Kamtul Rinpoche. Whatever may it benefit them and all sentient beings. And so we begin. I'd like to read from this little beautiful book called The Flower Garden of Anaya Khan. And I know you've all heard this, but I think it's always so beautiful to remember our Murshid's words. I gave up my music because I had received from it all I had to receive. To serve God, one must sacrifice the dearest thing, and I sacrificed my music, the dearest thing to me. I had composed songs, I sang, and I played the veena. And practicing this music, I arrived at a stage where I touched the music of the spheres. Then every soul became for me a musical note, and all life became attracted by my words. Listen to them instead of listening to my songs. Now if I do anything, it is to tune souls instead of instruments, to harmonize people instead of notes. If there's anything in my philosophy, it is the law of harmony with oneself and with others. I have found in every word a certain musical value, a melody in every thought, harmony in every feeling. And I've tried to interpret the same thing with clear and simple words to those who used to listen to my music. I played the veena until my heart turned into this same instrument. And then I offered this music to the divine musician. The only musician existing. Since then, I have become his flute. And when he chooses, he plays his music. The people give me credit for this music, which in reality is not due to me, but the musician who plays on his own instrument. So there's a collection of sacred readings that I'd like to offer over the next couple days. The first one is called The Path of Initiation. The second one is, not sure which order I have planned them in, is Mysticism. And the third one is the Sufi Teaching. I hope you'll find them as beneficial to you in your path. And I thought they were appropriate, especially for our circle, to share these together. Again, these are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And it's my intention to read these, not actually in their entirety, because they're quite long, but to read parts of them, and then to us to do supportive practices. Does that sound like a plan? Also, before we begin the reading, these are sentences that were given by Hazrat Inayat Khan to his murids. They are unpublished, but they're beautiful quotes. And so, for a moment, tune to your soul. And ask if you feel like it, we'll pass it around. And you can ask Murshid for his guidance. Each quote has a number by it, so if you remember the number after the class, you can see the paper and write the quote if you like to. Okay? And as you open it, you can read it silently or if you'd like to share it with the group. It's always wonderful to also share, but one should only do what one's comfortable doing here. Maybe we should begin here. Don't we, Carl? Or do you? So you can just...
Bless me, Lord, and my dear ones, and illuminate my soul to serve thy divine cause.
Grant me, Lord, thy wisdom, joy, and peace.
Divine light has illuminated me. Thy almighty power has strengthened me.
My life is unfolding to receive your blessing, Lord. Bless me in every way. Guide me on life's path.
Make my vision clear, Lord, and strengthen me to face the struggle of life.
My heart is the receptacle of thy divine inspiration and power.
Produce in my life, Lord, love, harmony, and beauty.
My mind is at rest, my body is healed, and my soul is illuminated by the grace of God.
Thank you.
By the grace of thy divine perfection, make my life complete.
Providence, bless me and complete my life. Okay. The path of initiation. The most important factor in the Sufi movement, and one could also say in the Sufi order or the Sufi Rouhaniyat, but these papers came through Naik Khan, who was the founder of the Sufi movement. So he says, the most important factor in the Sufi movement is the esoteric school. Although it is not the most important activity, we could just stop there and contemplate that. The most important factor in the Sufi movement is the esoteric school, although it is not the most important activity. For the reason that this school has to do with some few, not with the multitude. So when one takes an initiation, one takes that into the esoteric or the inner school. Just to be clear. The esoteric school is not for all and will never be for all. It is only for a few. It's interesting how it's changed over the years that people come and almost immediately think they must take initiation. But his thought was not for that. It was something different. Hazrat Anayat Khan goes on to say, often people have asked me why the Sufis of past ages did not try to spread Sufism. I have always answered that formally only one factor of Sufism existed, and that was the inner school, which always kept itself exclusive and which will always be kept in the same way. Propaganda is for the betterment of humanity. It is for the message of brotherhood, not for the inner school. The inner school is for the few who earnestly, steadily, and with patience seek the truth, who are awake to the voice of truth, and will have patience all along the journey. The inner school is not something a man or a woman follows, a form, a dogma, or a belief. The inner school is neither a dogma nor a belief. The work of the inner school is to tune the soul, to raise the individual from the plane where he stands to uplift the soul. This is a school where one learns to know oneself, where one comes to understand life. It is like the picture given in a poem in the Divan. Once a lion was wandering in the woods and found among some sheep a lion cub. It also ran away, the lion cub. It also ran away with the sheep. And when the lion followed the cub and approached it, it was very frightened. "Why are you afraid?" said the lion. You are lying too. No, no, said the cub. I'm a sheep. I'm no lion. I'm frightened. I tremble. But the lion said, I will not let you go among the sheep. You're a lion. The cub was very much afraid, but followed the lion. They came near a pool of water. The sun was clear and the water still. The lion said, while you drink in this water, look at your reflection and then look at me. And it saw itself and thought, I'm the same as this lion. Why do I run away like the sheep? Let the sheep go, and I will go and do the work of a lion. This is the work of the inner school. The initiation which Murshid gives to the Murid is as the call of the lion. The heart is the lake. When in the heart one begins to seek, one finds self, the secret of which one did not know fully before. Therefore, know that you have to expect nothing from initiation, that it does not give a new or great power or visions. No, this school does not pretend to give things of that sort. It is a school of tradition, thousands of years old, to which belongs saints and sages whose names are found in the scriptures of the past, whose names are not imaginary names, whose lives can be found in history. Therefore, know that behind us is a backbone of tradition of masters, prophets, wise men and women, and sages, who have proved that they understood the secret of life. We do not work for worldly success. Our movement aims at something greater. We will remain conscious of the dignity of the tradition behind us. We will not pretend to be on this side or that side. We will not try to be popular or to attract the masses. We do not mind how few we are. If only we are earnest in our task we have before us. Success in this school does not belong to great numbers. It does not depend on worldly things, but on the unfoldment of those who belong to it. Knowing that we shall be conscious of this dignity of the path of initiation in the school of the Sufi movement. How can this dignity be observed? First, by closing our lips. It is the light-hearted who give out all that is given to them, who speak of spiritual matters to anyone. This should not be your manner. You must show the lion's heritage, keeping the lips closed on sacred matters.
Why?
mind not if another has a different belief, a different conception. The Sufi is above different opinions. The whole secret of this path is to travel with lips closed. No discussion, no argument. There's your clue. No discussion, no argument. Not much talk on the subject of the soul, which is too sacred to talk about with everyone. And Murshid talks in other places about magnetism and about keeping the secret. Why do you think the yogis go away and do the practices in quietude and silence, build something? Then maybe, yes, they come to the world. You know, in some traditions, and you've heard me say this of Tibetan Buddhism, there's really no such thing as sin because it's cause and effect in karma. But if there is such a thing as sin in tradition, that tradition, it is to give the teachings prematurely or to people that do not want them. This is in a way I shouldn't say it. It's the negative forces work. When you see someone with a Bible on the corner and yelling at you some sort of prophecy, what do you want to do?
Away.
You want to run away. It's the same here. You talk too much about it, you can catalyze people to be fierce against you. You understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I have a beautiful story about this. A friend in Holland. She's a really wonderful person. The people that know her will know who I'm talking about when they listen to this. She's a scholar. She's an art historian. She's published through Princeton Press. Very well respected in her esoteric studies of art history, and a great servant of Sufism. She's been on the path many, many years. And one of her colleagues was a man from India, but wasn't so interested in spiritual matters. And they worked side by side in research together for many years. And her manner was always such, she never talked to him about Sufism because she knew that it wasn't his way, and she didn't, of course, want to proselytize, etc., etc. And finally, one day, she was dealing with something in her life, and he looked at her and he said, "I would like for you to tell me about your inner path, your inner world." Because of the way she handled herself, it was her example. Not what she said, or books she gave to read, or what she purported to know. It was her manner. That's the best testament. The nobility, yes? The nobility of the heritage. So he says, the whole secret of this path is to travel with lips closed. No discussion, no argument, not much talk on the subject of the soul, which is too sacred to be talked about with everyone. Besides, if you disagree, if you feel contempt for another custom, another manner, it shows your limitation. By tolerance, by understanding, by forgiving, one shows that the heart is large enough to assimilate all things. The ordinary mentality respects certain things and other things it doesn't like. The more spiritual one becomes, the more one will assimilate, understand. The higher a man is spiritually evolved, the greater is the willingness, the readiness to forgive. To know all is to understand all. The more aristocratic and noble, the more conscious, the more there is the expression of the divine, then whatever one thinks or feels or does One expresses the divine. This is the right principle. In this way, by struggling with oneself, one finds nobility, which is a divine heritage. And thus life will become harmonious, an expression of the divine. Besides, there is another thing, and that is meditation. By this, it is not meant praying on Sunday or even every evening, nor closing one's eyes for a few minutes. That's the beginning. But it is not what I mean. Our whole life should be in meditation. With everything we do, not one single moment should pass without it. By this, one accomplishes a task, which is the only yearning of the soul, to seek perfection. Remember in which boat you are traveling, in the boat of responsibility. Keep before you the dignity of your ideal and be persevering faithfully. You can be sure the desired result without any doubt. How beautiful is that? The path of initiation according to Murshid.
Yeah, I mean, if someone is interested, though, I mean, personally, I just feel like I'm just, you know, barely discovering what life is really all about. But I do find it, when somebody wants to engage in that kind of conversation, it can be insightful for both of us.
He didn't say not to do that.
Okay. So I can open my lips.
You didn't say that. But you see, the Sufi path isn't for everyone.
Right.
There are some people that are drawn to very traditional forms of religion, and that should be respected. Mm-hmm. Nikon was all about that, the unity of religious ideals. And to tell you the truth, also in other parts of the teachings, Murshid talks about, and I think even Rumi, there are beautiful poems about not waking one that's sleeping. Mm-hmm. And so you see, it's very, again, I have to always bring my Tibetan Buddhism in, because it's very clear in that path as well, where a teacher does not reveal the nature of the student's mind before it's premature. Mm-hmm. Because there is so much there that one could literally go mad. Mm-hmm. So you understand, it's kind of like ripping a Band-Aid off for some people. Mm-hmm. And so to do that, I mean, an icon spoke in public, so it's not like he's saying not to speak.
Right.
You have to kind of put things in perspective. Mm-hmm. But here he's not talking about Sufism. Here he's talking about the inner school. Mm-hmm. Now he says, he does make that distinction, and it's very subtle, about the brotherhood and the sisterhood work. That's the greater work. That's the social dimension of Sufism. But that's not the work of the inner school. The inner school is an individuated path that one takes up under the tutelage of your spiritual mentor. That's a different matter. You understand?
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
So the dances, for example, we could say is rather the brotherhood-sisterhood work. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's a beautiful practice. It's not to say that it's not deeply meaningful and infused with spirituality, but it is a very public dimension of the teachings, and one could liken that to the work of the brotherhood sisterhood work. It's very open in that way. But at the same time, these kinds of some of the practices that we might do as a circle, we're not going to go jump and offer them to everyone. Wouldn't be appropriate. They wouldn't understand. It could be confusing. And what's more, it's very powerful medicine. It may open a part of their being that is not intended to be open at this time. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Seems like it works both ways, too. What happens between you and your teacher? You don't go say, hey, you know, my teacher gave me this and told me that. For one thing, people may not understand. They're not getting the whole context. But the other thing is, you're speaking. You're letting out that you're supposed to sit with that energy. You're supposed to keep that inside. And just talking about it scatters it, you know, kind of, it's not cooked yet, it needs to just sit in there and be still inside you, so it's not that, I've got a secret, you know, but it's, you're working on something, and it's working when you don't know it's working, you know, it's just things that happen between you and your teacher.
It's like the charging of a battery, and when you give yourself in certain amounts of power to certain places, then you aren't fully charged.
You're going to get discharged.
You keep yourself charged.
Yeah.
And I believe the split there was sharing the joy with people that there is a greater work that is more service-oriented, that is not privy to people that aren't on that part of the path yet, or paths. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel.
Mm-hmm. You have to be cooked.
after a while, something the teacher said, weeks later, suddenly goes, I didn't really understand that before. Mm-hmm. Suddenly I do now. And if you'd been talking about half what you understood, it may not have actually realized in yourself much later.
I sort of found being on this path a very, very long time. And putting myself in a position where I sort of say, yeah, I know something. Sometimes someone comes to me, I have a housemate, I have an upstairs apartment, and we were just talking about the logistics of her leaving and trying to relate to her Jewish soon-to-be in-laws who can't stand her because she's not Jewish, and I would always say, you're going to have to join the tribe. You know. And then I started talking about the 12 tribes of Israel and Jesus' relationship to her. I was just going, And then she calls Jared out. And then I started saying things that I didn't even know were in me. But I wasn't giving her soul teachings, but I was giving her nourishment that she was pulling out of me at the time. And it was a really, it ended up both of us being this really sacred sharing. But I wasn't preaching at her. I went up with the intentions of what she wanted me to feed the cat, you know. And it turned into this really beautiful situation. So that does happen too, where some part, she was pulling out part of my she was pulling out some of my deep soul work, but I wasn't like teaching it to her. Mm-hmm.
Just while we're sitting here, on the swing of the breath, breathe in the phrase, draw me closer to thee every moment of my life, and breathe out, until in me be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. And we breathe in. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life. And as we breathe out, we just repeat this silently, until in me be reflected thy grace, glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. Draw me closer to thee every moment of my life, until in me be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. These words you may recognize as the closing lines from the morning prayer song. You know, the beauty of Wazifa, sometimes we hear it pronounced Wazaif, is that one word is so full of and pregnant with meaning and potentiality. Mm-hmm. I was reading this morning that even in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition again, and we did that dance this morning, Om Mani Padme Hum, that all of the sutras contained in that mantra. And so when one wants a simple explanation of that mantra, it's impossible to give. I mean, how can one take the 108 verses in the Khandur and the Tandur and put it in one sentence? It's not possible. But those latent qualities within us can be enlivened by the recitation of such mantras. And the same thing is true of wasifa, sacred words, sacred phrases. Yes?
I think this is really important. The Blue flipped on the television to PBS, to Scientific America with Alan Alda. And they took an American woman who had become a Sikh and put her in an MRI machine and had her read the grocery list. And they saw where her brain waves went. Then they had her chant sacred phrases. And when she was chanting the sacred phrases, they expected the cells to go into meditation and relaxation mode. But they were shocked because they went into rejuvenating healing mode.
Yeah.
And I, from my experience with the mysticism of sound, I feel like when I chant something in my own language, my mind becomes monkey brain. Mm-hmm. But I've been attuned to Aramaic and Arabic for so long that when I chant in these sacred words and sacred languages, then I can stay really focused into that spot. And now it's interesting to see doctors starting to include these things.
Yeah. What's interesting about some of these ancient languages too, that one of the things I learned in my Fulbright in Morocco was we were allowed access to all these incredible libraries, the oldest one in the world, at Alcoyne University, and these very old Qurans that are in the Royal Library, for example, we were given access to, and we were able to meet with scholars, even some that are in some of the libraries. They're also on the skins that they're restoring, and we met with the people that are restoring them, and of course linguists. I mean, some of the people with us were linguists. And so in the Arabic language, in the Aramaic language, also the ancient Hebrew languages, as you know, any of you that study those languages, they're a consonant-based language. And the words become sort of comprehended by the vowel markings that are put along the consonant line. But the interesting thing is that those really old Qurans don't have the vowels there. They're only consonant-based, which means they are very open to interpretation. And so they've become literalized, if there's such a word, in a certain way, and kind of codified, but their meaning was meant to be much more open to interpretation and sort of self-revelation in a way. It's really important to know, I think.
Yeah. Are old Hebrew texts like that?
Yes,
well?
Also that. And Aramaic also.
Yeah, and Aramaic itself. That's what we're studying in the Aramaic.
That's
works,
right.
All the different possible meanings.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting to know that. So I wanted to use, just for a few minutes, these phrases, because draw us closer to the every moment of our life is like calling us to the inner core of our being, that hidden part, Batin, or sometimes you hear it Batin, depending dialectical. The Egyptians tended E, they had a lot of that sound, if it's an Egyptian dialect. But Batin and Zahir is the manifest one, the one that radiates. So draw us closer to the Ya Batin, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. Zahir, the manifest one. So let us do that practice. I have my Buddhist mala on. Does anyone have their we'll count. Do you have a one set up with 99 beads with 33 spacers?
Yes, but you have to look for the spacers. They're not too obvious.
Oh, they're the smaller one. Excuse me.
That's the smaller one.
And just hold that concentration. Yavatin, Yazakir. Yavatin, Yazakir. Now, I told you this about the languages because I'm not intentional at trying to impress anyone, but because if I give you a simple explanation of Baton and Zahir, it's limited because of my limitations. But if you tune to the quality of the vibration, hopefully you'll realize something within yourself, like Akima was saying. You know, Nikon gave a practice for a lifetime to a person. They didn't switch them up because it went deep, worked with the soul level, and became the person's experience and realization. So although Baton means the hidden one, and Zahir means the manifest one, the meaning is infinite and vast. So the intention is to feel that secret, that beautiful secret that's hidden within every soul, and then to allow it to manifest through your being. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we do the wazifas, we begin by using the word Yah. Yah is like, oh dear one, oh blessed one. And we say the wazifa aloud. When I love this analogy, which you've heard me say before, it's as if we're calling that quality, which of course it's an illusion that it is without, it is outside of ourselves. So we're beckoning that quality. But in a way, in truth, those vibrations exist in the universe. And so we're calling to rally those forces, to bring them into perhaps our realization, because nothing really is outside of us. We just, that's an illusion, that's separate perception. But we're invoking it, so we're calling it aloud, and we're addressing it in a respectful and endearing way. Oh dear Baton, oh dear Zahir, but we use the word Yah, Y-A. And then after we say that recitation 34 times, some if they're doing, we'll do 101, so we're going to do 34, 34, 33. Then we'll just go into a whisper. And here we're going to put the wazifa on the tandem of the breath. So we're going to breathe in, and out. And breathing in, and then we'll just go silently on the breath, breathing in, silently, okay? So tune to those qualities, tune to the breath, the hidden one, the one that is veiled, the one that is protected from its hidden quality, like the pearl. And then the one that opens like the shell where the pearl becomes revealed. Ya Baton, Ya Zahir, 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 Ya Baton, Ya Zahir,
Silently on the breath. As you breathe in, ad, and breathe out, zahir. And let the vibrations penetrate deeply into every cell of your being. As with the breath, the recitation of the wazifa is going on and on, vibratorily within your being, at every level, physical, emotional, spiritual, mental. Closer to thee every moment of our life, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. Thank you. rise and say a prayer together. I just want to let you know that the next session will begin, I don't know, 3:30, is that right? For those that want to stay, we'll talk a little bit about thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy, and thy peace. The elements. The elements. Think about that. That is infused in that prayer. The elemental practice. We'll talk a little bit about that and do some more practice. Everyone's okay with us posting these discussions and classes? I know some of you shared things. You can post them online. Okay. So let us say the prayer psalm of which these lines come from. Praise be to thee, most supreme God, omnipotent, omnipresent, all-pervading, the only being. Take us in thy parental arms, raise us from the denseness of the earth, thy beauty do we worship, and to thee do we give willing surrender. Most merciful and compassionate God, the idealized Lord of the whole humanity, thee only do we worship, and towards thee alone do we aspire. Open our hearts towards thy beauty. Illuminate our souls with divine light. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, all-powerful creator, sustainer, judge, and forgiver of our shortcomings. Lord God of the East and of the West, of the worlds above and below, and of the seen and unseen beings, pour upon us thy love and thy light. Give sustenance to our bodies, hearts, and souls. Use us for the purpose that thy wisdom chooses, and guide us on the path of thine own goodness. Draw us closer to thee every moment of our life, until in us be reflected thy grace, thy glory, thy wisdom, thy joy.